Sure. Chair Randall?
Here.
Mayor Parrish?
Here.
Chairman McKay? Chairman Wheeler?
Here.
Councilmember Snyder?
Here.
Board Member Crystal? Mayor Meyer?
Here.
Mayor Wilson?
Here.
Vice Mayor Banks?
Here.
Ms. Hines?
Here.
Mr. Cobb? Mayor Wood?
Present.
Ms. Crabble?
Here.
Mr. Horsley?
Here.
We don't have a quorum.
Chair Randall, we don't have a quorum yet.
Oh, we're going to call Jeff Realty.
Yeah.
But Chair Randall, if you so choose, you can receive the presentation, you just can't.
I know, but that's, if he's in the building, let's just change.
Big county.
Now, do we have four?
Yes, we do, thank you.
Four of one in the door, what, that's not a problem. Four of one in the door. Okay, we start off by, everyone had a chance to see their minutes from the December, the January 9th meeting. May I have a motion to approve?
Madam Chair.
Motion to approve, Mr. Wilson, second by Mr. Parrish, special motion. Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passed unanimously by all the members voting here before the president. We have quite a few presentations for this evening. We will start this evening on, with Mr. Keith Jackson, the president of the transportation. This is always interesting. Seriously, I like this. Mr. Jackson has that accent, it's not at all.
It all goes downhill after me. Chair Randall, members of authority, good evening. This is an exciting presentation for us, representing the end of the current transition cycle and the beginning of the next transition cycle. You may be aware, some of you may not be aware, that we've undertaken a number of waves of attitudes and priorities and perceptions of Northern Virginians in connection with the transaction. We have just completed the 2019 wave. Previously, we did this in 2015 and 2016. These surveys provide great insights as to how Northern Virginians feel about transportation and how they feel about bodies such as MBTA and other regional governments and local governments are performing with respect to transportation. So this work has been done, as I say, under the transaction umbrella by the AECOM team, but the work specifically has been conducted by Heart and Mind Strategies, which is a Reston-based company. And I'm very pleased to introduce to you Dr. Dee Alsop, who is the founding partner of Heart and Mind Strategies, who's going to walk you through the 2019 survey results.
Thank you, Keith. Pleasure to be with you here this evening. This is the third time I've come to brief your committee, and my job is to give you a report card on how you're doing from your employers, the residents of this region. And the report card that you're going to get tonight is one I think you'll be quite pleased with, because residents are seeing significant improvements in the performance of the implementation and planning of transportation initiatives in the region. There's more here than I can share, and so I'm going to quickly move to some of the more highlighted items, I think, as explain why you're getting the kind of positive feedback, and then what they see as some of the priorities for the future. Just as a reminder, this is based on a study of about 600 residents in this region. It's a study that's done about the same time when we do it. This, because it is the third time, we have the ability to look at some comparisons with previous years to be able to see some changes in that. And we look at the data and we do it in a way that equally represents people according to their proportions in the population by age and gender and ethnicity and particular region or geography with inside the region. So with that basis, let me kind of go on and tell you that the three things that I'm seeing that account for improved favorability of how they're rating the transit authority have to do with primarily a reduced commute time in terms of at least their perception that they can get to where they're going on a day-to-day basis significantly faster than they have in the compared to 3 years ago. In addition to that, just overall improved performance on a variety of the transit priorities and initiatives that you have under your stewardship. And then thirdly, the news media itself is a much more positive tone and tenor in terms of the coverage of the things they're doing, the percent of things that are positive stories versus negative stories. And those things collectively, I think, are having the most significant impact on the overall improvement in ratings that we're going to be looking at. So I'm going to jump ahead now over just some of these summary slides to this one here, page 15, if you would. This is a look at those people who drive to work every day and the perception that they give us open-ended about how much time it takes them to get to work. So we ask them about how much time is the max acceptable commute. That's the yellow in the middle, which they hasn't changed, which is about a 36-minute commute is about what they say is the most they can they find is acceptable. When we did the study 3 years ago, their normal commute was just about 3 minutes better than what they find is their maximum acceptable. Today, it's almost 7 minutes faster than they say what their max acceptable is. So overall, there's been a 3-minute improvement in terms of their perception of how much time it takes them to get to work. That obviously is going to have a pretty positive impact on how they're feeling about things. And that's one of the things I think is underlying what we're seeing here. One of the other specific things, and now we go to page 17, that this assignment gave to us is to track awareness of the Northern Virginia Transit Authority as well as transaction. And new this year, there's just a lot of communication advertising about Nova Rides, and so we thought we'd ask a question about that. But there are about 1 in 3 people, since the beginning of doing this study, you see in the upper left-hand corner, about 35%, who are heard or read about Northern Virginia Transit Authority. That number is about half that when you look at transaction. And
that's hardly any public official who's running for office. Not bad at all.
And Nova Rides, which is, at least as far as I'm aware of, I had not heard much about that until this year. A lot of publication, advertising, radio things, that jumped right up to 30% who are aware and are tracking that. The folks who are aware of transaction, I want to point that out, or Northern Virginia Transit Authority, are a group that we look at in terms of how their attitudes are and other things. And it's interesting, you'll see that people who know who you are and follow what you're doing are also the ones who are giving the most positive ratings, which is not always the case in a lot of organizations and things we're looking at. If you'll go with me now to the very next page, 18, this is kind of the summary measurement in terms of all things considered. Is your performance poor, fair, good, or excellent? And as you can see over the last 3 years, if you're looking at the Northern Virginia region, the percent of good and excellent has jumped 9 points. And that's a very significant movement. And if you look at the bottom one, that's simply amongst those who are aware of NVTA, that approval is 47%. So those folks who are aware are even more positive. And I'm not going to go into a lot of in-depth on what's on the right side of that chart, but I will point out that folks who are lower incomes, who are higher minorities, and more likely to have lower education, folks who are most likely dependent on public transportation are also the ones who are rating you more highly overall as a transportation authority. And I think that's a good indicator that you're serving those who are probably in most need of transportation solutions. So that's another positive thing. Next, I want to jump to page 19. And this is a new question we put in. And this is just simply to get at how many people are aware of all the different initiatives that you've done with the bus system. And about 40% have, 42% have heard or read about one of these different types of initiatives. In my mind, that's a pretty significant number, considering the actual percentage of people who are dependent or use bus systems. So I'm not that number, the fact that it's not a majority or large majority doesn't concern me at all. I think that's a very high and positive number. Now, most of them are only aware of one initiative. There's a few people who can are aware and recall all the initiatives. Very few, all of them, but most of them are just one. But the initiatives you can see on the right, this is the percent of those people who are aware of specifically the Richmond Highway BRT, the Alexandria Transit Vision is 16%. About 13% of those aware are aware of the Transformation Project, and 12% are aware of the Envision Route 7. So just a sense of awareness on some of those initiatives. The other thing that you'll see, if you go with me to page 21, this isn't about transportation per se. This is just about my quality of life and things that are affecting my quality of life living here in the region. And there's three things I quickly wanted to point out to you. There's fewer people who are saying transportation is having the most impact on my life and congestion. And that's a good indicator as well. That means that's no longer the big worry. There's issues that are coming up a little bit more is housing affordability. And the other one is a little bit more than it has been historically is the range of housing choices. And those are typical in some of popular growing urban areas of the types of things that you would see there. If you jump now to page 24, two things here. This is also new. These are factors that influence where I want to live or where I want to work. And the line that's in blue with the dots, that reflects the priorities of where I want to live. And those that are kind of in the dark, dark navy blue with the triangles, that's the priorities with regard to where I want to work. You can see that folks are primarily looking at places, if you look at the top, low crime, but also affordability, particularly affordability for commuting is the second highest for where I want to work. Also where I want to work or being close to where I work. And the other one, only one I'm other going to mention here on this one is the fifth one down, access to good public transportation. That's the fifth highest priority overall for where I want to live. And it's about the fifth one also for where I want to work. This is useful information overall just to get a mindset of the priorities that people have in the region in terms of where they want to live. Now, another question we ask is, what are your top priorities? And then on your top priorities as far as transportation, we then follow up and say, are we doing a good job, mostly good, or mostly bad? And the interesting trend that you'll see there is over the years, regardless of what they're saying is their top priority, when we ask the follow-up and we're saying, is the region doing a good job or a bad job, that has also steadily gone up. And so the things that they care the most about, you're getting a better and better report card in terms of their perception of doing a good job. And that's I think, another thing, that another piece of evidence of that your employers are pretty happy with your performance. This is that same data, but just arrayed differently. And right at the top is the percent of people who are saying this is my most important priority. And traffic on the far left is traffic flow and congestion. That is becoming less and less a priority, went from 59 to 47. As we saw, that's because it's getting better. People are less worried about it. Transportation options, that is a priority, has gone up. But you also look over in the far right. Look at the jump in terms of people who are feeling like you guys are doing a good job on the transportation infrastructure. That moved from 43% to 68%, and it's held it this year at 63%. So again, another piece of evidence of the fine job that you all are doing. This next chart I want to share with you is on page 28, and it's a little busy, and I'm not going to get into each thing here, but these lines show you some important pieces of information. Let's focus first on the green lines. The dotted lines represent 2015 and 2016. The solid line represents what we're seeing now in terms of your performance in 2019. And I think that's actually a typo there in the green that I hadn't seen before. But that dark green line, solid line, is 2019. And what you'll see is that solid line is consistently above the dotted lines. That means your performance across all of these initiatives is higher. And on some of them, it can't be explained by just random chance of the sample. Things like a transportation system that's affordable, that jumped 8 points. Something like using the latest technology to make sure we have efficient, safe transportation, that jumped 5 points. And new highways and road improvements, that's up 6 points. And then over in the middle there, to a little bit to the right of the middle, new public transportation options, that's up 7 points. So again, significant positive improvement across the board on a variety of these initiatives under your stewardship. And then if we would go to slide 32, this is, I think, just a useful chart. If you want to see what people care the most about, how you're doing, this is the chart that arrays all those pieces of information. And in the far right and the upper right-hand quadrant, those are the things that are most important, and those are the things that you're doing a good job on. And those include things like the road improvements, affordability, latest tech and efficiency, system connecting rail, roads, and buses. Those are all things that I would consider your greatest equities and accomplishments in terms of perception of the people. On the far right on the bottom, these are things that are really important to them, but which they feel like performance could be better. That's trip times, predictability of trips, and even increasing public transportation even more. And on the far left on the upper quadrant, those are things you're doing a really good job of, but maybe aren't getting that much attention or are perceived as not that important, things like the dynamic pricing and so forth. Now let's, if we can, let's jump to slide 36. This is the coverage. This is what people are hearing and reading about you. And on the far left, you can see there's actually fewer people are hearing and reading about you. Now, you might think that that's not good. In my mind, that's actually probably, in your case, a good sign, because what they were hearing and reading about 3 years ago, if you recall, were all the systems largely having to do with the Metro and WMATA. And that was a period of time when they actually had closures for safety inspections. It was causing backup, transportation, congestion, and all kinds of other things. So in my mind, this 56 number is actually an excellent number. It's a good number for people hearing and reading about you. More significant, if you look in the middle, the balance of what they're hearing is far more positive. It's now you've got 35%, one out of three, everything things that they're reading about transportation is a good thing. And that's the highest we've ever measured. It's up 7 points over where it was a few years ago. So another good indicator what's there. And for Keith and his team, we actually have gone through every comment that they made. We have that in the file and appendix. There's just a lot of positive things about openings of easy pass lanes, new completion of the metro lines, new stations opening. There's just a lot of good news out there that people are able to point to. And on the negative side, that 33% metro mentions, this is the percent of things that were negative. 3 years ago when we did this, that was over 60% of the mentions all had to do with WMATA and Metro. With that, let's move on to a couple other things here. These, we're kind of moving now and just to some other interesting things. This is how people are hearing and reading about transportation. Where are they getting their information? That profile, as you might expect, has changed a lot.
That's page 40.
This is 40, page 40, yes. The traditional methods of TV, radio, and print are all declining significantly. And as you might expect, social media has increased significantly. And on the right, okay, in social media, what is it? Most of the folks are going to Facebook, but Twitter and Instagram are also significant sources of where they're getting it. So your programs, how you talk to your people when you want to get stories out, that's obviously changed significantly over the years. And then if you would go with me to page 43. This is a fun question we ask. If you had control of the budget and you can put dollars where you wanted them, how much would go to roads? How much would go to rail or transit? How much would go to incentives to actually get less driving at peak times? And how much would go to bicycle pedestrian improvements? And it, amazingly, that number is very stable. Over time, and I'm not sure exactly how closely that matches where you actually spend your dollars, but in terms of perceptions, they really prefer to see it in roads and in rail, and that's just interesting you back there. A couple other interesting things. Jump to slide 45. This is What one word or phrase would you use to describe your overall feelings of self-driving cars being on the road in Northern Virginia in the near future? We actually did ask this 3 years ago as well. I can tell you the dangerous is a little bit smaller, good and interesting are a little bit bigger. This is changing. People's perceptions, there's more curiosity and interest, and there's growing positive acceptance of self-driving or automated vehicles. Just a couple more things and then we'll open questions.
These are actual responses.
These are actual words that they use. And, one word that they use, this is a word cloud. Their size reflects the preponderance of their responses. Then we asked them to tell us, how would you like to fund construction, the future construction or maintenance of transportation infrastructure? The thing that gets the highest mention is actually just incentives to actually get people to use the transit and HOV so we don't actually have to build any more new roads is the biggest thing that they're saying in terms of the highest priority. But beyond that, it's vehicle tax, like registration, fuel taxes, etc., is where they would look to. And variable pricing, also equally high, about a third of people who would say that that would be their priority. And then, I think this will be the last one we share. And this is just the changing landscape of transportation options. And this is moving quickly. Look at the difference of people who have used or are currently using Uber and Lyft. That's gone up 15 points in the last 3 years. But look over on the right. This is the percent of people 3 years ago versus now and saying that my usage is increasing. There's a smaller number that's saying it's increasing, so there's a good sign that the Uber and Lyft is leveling off. There's actually, if you go down to the next one on taxi, that's pretty stable year over year, and there's actually a few more people who are saying they're increasing taxi usage than compared to 3 years ago. It's not significantly or appreciable, but it's new. It's a little bit. About 17% of the residents have used scooters. And increasing is it's by far the one that is the most increasing in terms of where they think things are headed. Zipcar, that's up 6 points, percentage that are using that, and for in terms of vehicle ownership and the impact that has on vehicle ownership, that 6% may not seem like a lot, but that represents a lot of cars. And that is declining a little bit in terms of perception. I think that's going to be there. Bike share, up 4. And that's also more, the big majority of people say that's going to be about the same. So bike share, I think, is beginning to level up. And the very last thing I'm sharing with you is just the percentage of people who are engaging in online shopping. That just has an impact on commuting and shopping. The percentage of people who are doing online shopping once a week or more has gone up a little bit as well. So congratulations on the positive report of the residents in the region and how they perceive you're doing, and I'm open for any questions you might have.
That was fantastic. I hate online shopping. I go to the store. I go to shop. That was really very good. Thank you so much. Questions?
I'm just always curious if you see a lot of variability based on where people live. Is there, or are these numbers fairly consistent across our jurisdictions?
No, you'd see a lot of variability by region or geography, particularly in use and commute times and a lot of those things. The study isn't designed in a way that we have sufficient sample by the geographies to be able to give that with a high definition and confidence. You can look at it by those breaks and get a general sense of the differences, and as a person who does this a lot, I actually trust those numbers pretty well in terms of telling me direction of what's going on.
Mr. Parrish?
Thank you. I have a question, much like Mary's. First of all, it is very interesting now that you've got a number of years to be able to track where we're heading over time, and that's very, very interesting. But I was curious, I think you had something with over 600 people in your sample,
yeah.
Is that right?
That's right.
Were they spread out, or were they just in Northern Virginia, the 9 jurisdictions?
They were. If we actually show the jurisdictions and show exactly right at the very beginning here. Sorry. So, busy on me.
And my next question.
This is where they are, and this is the percentage of our respondents coming from each of those jurisdictions, which is should match up our census data that we use to guide us.
So it sort of it tracks volume of people in various jurisdictions and volume of your.
Not just by chance, we make sure it does when we accept respondents.
Yes. Back on the slide where you show, it was like 46 or 45, and we talked about like people, the percentage going up for people that's okay with paying to play or the HOV and the high.
Yeah.
Can you pull that one back up again? I think
I can. Unfortunately, it's at the back end, so we zip to
it. Yeah, we didn't have it in here, but.
And you guys didn't go past page 40 in
the 43.
Yeah, we'll send that out.
Right, this right one? Here. Yes. It said, so folks, you seeing that's going up, or is this the first year you've
been? This first year we've done this.
Oh, so this, okay, so this is the first. I was wondering if there was a comparison. I just wanted to see if people are happy with, because the way the costs are going up now, it seems like I think they even went up in the last
this will, there were a few new questions that we had, and this will be a nice one to be able to track.
Yeah, because the prices, for some of us, we don't like sitting in traffic, so we do pay too much.
Let me address one other aspect of his question.
Okay.
This is things that people don't like about what they've heard and read that's negative. And you can see 21% is about tolls.
Yeah.
And that's a significant increase over 2016. Wow. So. So that is affecting it. Let me just see on the positive. Is there anything? Yeah. Well, okay. So HOV and express lanes, that's a positive thing for some people, but for others, but this is 21%, not of the entire group, but of those who gave negative responses.
All right. And I can see how it went both ways.
Yeah, it does.
Because for me, for the times where I don't have three people and I need to get somewhere, then I want to jump in and go. But I actually did a resolution against it.
That's right. Did you have a question?
Yeah, first, good presentation. Thank
you're
you.
You're welcome.
In your 600 sample size, did you look at the income, and I'm wondering the disparity of income?
Uh-huh, that's a good question.
So we don't set quotas for income representation, but we do set quotas in terms of age, gender, and ethnicity. So we make sure that we're in geography. So we're making sure we're getting a group that's as representative on those dimensions. To what happens when you do that and impose kind of quotas on those is it pretty well ensures that you get a variety of distribution by income. And in the, I don't know, do you have the back page here? In the back page of this, we actually show what the income distribution is in terms of the demographics. It's on page 51. I guess your deck doesn't go there. I apologize for that. But there's about a quarter of the folks who are under 50,000, 20% that are between 35 to 50, and it's a pretty good mix after that in terms of the other income levels.
Thanks.
But if you have a specific question, just let me know after, and I can find out.
Yeah, some of our decks on page 43 mines also. So we have these electronically.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I cheated on the page. My deck has page 51. And it on this demographic chart, there's some interesting things on here to answer some of the questions you had. But mine is more like Mary's. You know, where the question was by jurisdiction, did you see anything different? I'm looking at the demographics and seeing 60% roughly of the people surveyed were age 44 or lower. And I'm wondering if people above age 44 saw anything different. Because obviously some of these things up here, you know, younger folks are a lot quicker to pick up on Uber, Lyft, scooters, some of the things that we've seen. And we know about a lot of isolation issues and challenges seniors face. So I'm just wondering if you saw how they saw our network and options any different than people who were 44 or younger.
So throughout the deck, you can see, like on the right, we'll highlight things that are different. And if a subgroup doesn't show up there, that means they're pretty close to the average for everybody. But if they're called out here, like some of the things on gender and things like that, that means they are standing out. And there are a few cases, particularly if you look at like a, what's driving quality of life considerations, which Keith was just pointing out here to me on the right. Like over on the right side there, reducing traffic congestion is, let's see. Yeah, it's more important for some of those age groups. Improving housing affordability is a lot more important to younger groups, things like that. But those boxes on the right will always call out those differences in terms of whenever they appear.
You have a term called non-influencers.
So influencers is a term that we use, and I'm glad you asked that. I should have mentioned that. It's not a pejorative way. It's just a way for us to look at and identify people. We call influencers are people who are highly interested in transportation issues and consider themselves informed. We consider those influencers because they're following it and they're probably giving you feedback. And the non-influencers are people who aren't very interested in those things and don't follow them very closely. So that's what that means. Thank you for asking that question.
I just did one. The next
one,
silent majority.
No. And those are supporters and opposers. But they're just people who care about it and they're going to be more informed about it. And
so we recently had a presentation on Loudoun County that led me to ask how many citizens of Loudoun County now work in the county. It was 50%, which is bringing me to page 54 in your deck, because although the question is where they want to live, as you have this down here, it's really not where they want to live, it's what amenities do they want to have. So what amenities they want to have drives.
What page was it, Casper?
24. Oh, sorry. So what they want to have drives where they want to live. That's what it seems like to me by the questions that you're asking. So it's possible that, you know, Tyson's Corner is going to see more traffic because people want to see easy access to shopping. So it was an interesting. Monica, remember last year we had that one graph that was really interesting. It had who was leaving which
on the origin and destination.
Going. That would be an interesting graph to overlay on this right here, because it shows where you're going and where you're going. And I remember it so well because in Loudoun County, the people who are leaving our county to go someplace else to work, the first place they were going was Fairfax County. But the second place and third place were both in Maryland. And then they came back in and was Alexandria and Pittsburgh in that order. So where you want to live is and what you want to do is connected to the amenities you want to have.
Absolutely.
So my next question is, although on page, there was a page where you did have, you know, the negatives were tolling. Was there any question that was specifically about tolling by itself?
No.
There was no question that we just went for tolling. So that 21% was the ones which are negatives. They just.
That
they
was
just,
unaided, unsolicited.
Okay, that's a high number. And then finally, were there any questions?
But that's the 22% of those who gave a negative answer,
sure.
Which was about, so 22% of about 45%.
Okay.
So it's one fifth of the 45 that's coming up with them.
Yeah.
Less than 10%.
Yeah. Were there any questions about what people want to see? Because like what we don't have as much in this part of Northern Virginia is like slug lines and ride shares and that type of thing. Were there any questions about those types of things?
There were questions about broader initiatives than that. Let me see if I can find that one.
And finally, it strikes me that this would be good to share this in DTC. So there's as much in here about transit as it is about pavements, right?
We didn't get into that level of detail, but there was a question. I'm sorry, oh, here it is, page 34. I didn't skip it actually. Appreciate your interest in these things. I knew you had a short agenda for this, but appreciate your questions. So this one is looking at importance of potential improvements and other initiatives in the region. And you can see, let's see if I see tolls on here. Yeah, at the very bottom, dynamic tolling. You can see that you've got a majority who say it's important, but it's the least important amongst all the other initiatives. But also think about that in the context of the percentage of people who are this is actually personally relevant to. And so the fact that this is not relevant to probably the majority of residents in the region, and it's still getting that level of support is still a pretty positive indicator.
Okay. All right. That was really interesting. Thank you very much.
You're sure welcome.
Chair Randall, if I may, just to wrap up, I just wanted to make you aware of what we're actually going to do with this information moving forward. As you're aware from last month's meeting, we had a listening session for transaction. And so this information is very complementary to that information. I appreciate the question from Ms. Hines about variability of the responses by location. And what this information gives us is a very high level view. Very early on in transaction, we're going to be doing two things. We'll be holding focus groups, which allows us to, with a small group of people, to drill really deeply into these issues. And then in parallel, we'll be doing various polls and surveys, probably online, which goes out to a broad group of people, but we maybe only ask for very shallow level responses, but across a broad range. So this is going to be really, really helpful for us. It already is helpful in helping us shape our thinking on how we want to go about updating transaction on this next update cycle that has just started. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. I appreciate that. Okay, board members, we're now going to go into our action items. And the first action item we have is our public hearing. Date of public comment period. Ms. Jackson.
So thank you, Madam Chair. As you know, we are in the process of updating our inaugural six-year program, and this program update will cover fiscal years. We say 2020 to 2025, but in reality, we're adding fiscal years 2024 and 2025. We will have some flexibility to try to accommodate some projects sooner, but it's really too soon to get into that right now. So what we're asking you this evening is to approve the public hearing date in addition to the public comment period for the program update. I will note that April 16th is not the second Thursday of the month, as you normally meet. It's actually the third Thursday of the month. When you adopted your meeting schedule for this year, we noted that the second Thursday of April was actually during spring break and Passover, so we wanted to stay away from that, so we pushed the meeting back to the third Thursday of the month. If this date works for the public hearing, we would ask you to release the document for public comment Friday, March the 13th, which is the day after, the day following your March authority meeting, and then close the comment period on April 26th at midnight. And this is all predicated upon the June adoption of the six-year program. And what this will give us an opportunity to do, of course, we always have the public hearing, but in addition to the public hearing, comments can be fielded online, people can submit comments, and we'll try to do some other things to make sure we're engaging the public and getting out to where the public is. One thing we are working on right now, Delegate LaRocque passed the bill, I think it was two years ago, that stated that the authority, NBTC, VRE, I think it was ZRPT, the Commonwealth, the Commonwealth, we would do a joint public meeting to talk about some of our funding programs. Last year was the first year we did that, and it's interesting because everyone doesn't have a funding program at the same time. Like, for example, last year the authority did not have a funding program that we were taking to the authority for action. So what we did was talk about the projects that you had approved. This year, I do want to know what's interesting, because this is the long session. I know the Commonwealth would like to wait until session is over, see how the administration's bill looked, the omnibus bill, HB 1414, what's included when it's finally passed, and then take that back and make some adjustments to the draft 6-year improvement program before they're ready to do that. So that's a long way of saying we're still working out when we could possibly do the joint public meeting, but per your action tonight, we would have the public hearing on April the 16th. Please note that we are have baked into this schedule an open house that starts at 5:30 p.m. And then immediately following the open house, or we will have a presentation starting at 7 o'clock on the 41 projects that are being vetted for funding consideration. I do want to note we have shared the congestion reduction relative to cost evaluation and analysis with the jurisdictions and agencies. We've received some feedback, but when we release the documents, the documents with the data, it is without recommendation, because we don't want to get ahead of the public by releasing a document with recommendation.
So before I get to a motion, the authority members, many people are seeing these dates for the first time, and I'm watching some inks around the table, because we're all into maybe jurisdictions are in the budget cycles right around then. Most budget cycles start somewhere between now and a month from now, and end somewhere from early April to early May. So I'm looking at everybody looking at their phones. And my concern is on April 16th we may not have form. Now do we need form to do a public hearing?
I don't think we need a quorum.
I don't know about quorum, but it would be, I believe, in the authority's best interest to have as many members present as possible to listen to the feedback citizens have.
I do too. I almost want to say I may want to do a poll via email versus taking the vote here, because I just want everyone to go back and have time to look at their schedules, because unlike other things, you know, if you're going to miss a meeting normally, you can send an alternate, you can send somebody in your stead, but because this is public, because this is during the time when we're being budgets, everyone on all the jurisdictional boards will be in those public hearings or those workshops. So if the main member of the authority can't come, you also can't send anybody in your stead to give the information to you back. And so with the authority's indulgence, what I prefer to do is have these dates sent out, and then bring them, if you can send in by today's Thursday, and no less than a week from now, or no more than a week from now, if these dates might work for you, if they might not. And so we just get a poll of what looks like they may work, because we go first, Loudoun goes first, and we finished early April, which means everybody else is probably smack in the middle, or at least not finished by April 16th. That's my thought. So, Mayor Fesh, you might be discussing the motion and send it out via email?
Can we work via email?
You can get a
straw poll.
A straw poll, not a vote. Via email.
Does it make sense to just vote pending confirmation or something?
Well, no.
I mean, is there a delay? If we can't vote on this officially until next month, is that a problem?
Well, what staff's perspective is, there are advertising issues that we do have to make sure we meet regarding the public hearing.
Right.
What happens if it pushes 1 month?
Well, and so that was something I was going to suggest. This would be, I guess, worst case scenario, worst best of the worst, if you will, is push the public hearing back to the next month instead of April, push it back to May the 14th. I believe that's the date of your May meeting, and it's already a scheduled meeting, which would subsequently push adoption back to July. We don't want to go any further than that because you don't meet in August, but we'll be here if you want to be here. But we could do that as well.
I just, I would actually be more willing to do that because it's already an authority meeting. Mm-hmm. But I have a feeling that there's just going to be a lot of people who are not going to be make April, even March and April, to be quite honest, meetings, because you know we are literally on the days 4 days a week between the budget meetings and public hearings, and I just don't see that happening in April. So we can make a motion to table this until the next meeting, and then make a motion. Are we going to make a motion, Justin, to just say we're going to do the public hearing in on May 14th? That might be the best way to do that.
And I would say from the joint meeting requirement, it solves part of the problem that we're having, because the SIP isn't going to be up until the middle of May. So what the comment has for people to comment on will likely happen around that time. So maybe it makes that meeting a little easier.
So okay. If you move to May, what does that do to the public comment?
Push everything back
a month. It does shift everything back a month. And we can accommodate that with the schedule is in, or we as your staff, we can accommodate what you would like to accommodate. But I don't think you want to meet in August.
We're not.
I mean, you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Let me ask a question here before I make a motion. Monica, if we move the public hearing date to the 14th of May, what would your dates for the public comment period be?
So I would suggest releasing the document for public comment April 17th, which is the day after your April authority meeting.
April 17th through
yes.
May.
What is that, the 27th or 26th,
27th? But we're still going to have an MBTA meeting on the
16th. As of now, and I'm sorry, when I say... Because I need to, our goal is to have it in on a Sunday, so it would be May the 24th.
Okay. All right. Then, Madam Chairman, I'd like to move that the public hearing date be set for May 14th, and that the public comment period be April 17th through May 24th for the FY 2025 6-year program.
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. Harris, seconded by Mr. Wilson. Is there further discussion on that motion? Mr. Harris, do you have anything open to make
here? Yeah, I would just point out, since we're talking about April 16th, we know we can't be here. So I would also, you know, for staff, for advance, because we have budget public hearings that night, so for future planning, if there's any actions that need to be taken that night, we need to take that into consideration, which is why I'm glad we're voting tonight on the May date.
I know I can, but that doesn't. I think we may not have quorum at night. If both of if neither one of you can,
right. We both have budget public hearing that night.
Yes. Okay. All right. So motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion?
Is the decision shall all I do? Public hearing May 14th.
Yes.
And what's the date in July?
The July date is July the 9th.
And you're saying that some don't vote dates out?
Yes.
The June date is the 11th, right?
June is the 11th.
All right. It is very tight. This is why we love to show the people right here. Okay.
But I will know what it does with ending the public comment period in May. It gives us as staff the month of June to assimilate the comments, have some responses, go to the technical advisory committee, the planning coordination advisory committee, and then the planning and programming committee to share all of that data with the committees as we work to develop a recommendation.
Yep. This issue really comes up once a year because of the budget cycles. Mm-hmm. It, you know, normally when we have an MBTA meeting, people have blocked that out on their schedule, and they know that this won't come up. But when you're in the middle of the budget cycle, this is nothing you can do. You can't do anybody else. So. Mm-hmm. All right, motion made by Mr. Parrish, seconded by Mr. Wilson. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passed unanimously for all voting members. Next item, number six, the Region of Revenue Fund Appropriations Cancellation for Fairfax County Parkway and Widening, Mr. Mondi, and now I'll open Mr. McKay for a motion.
Thank you, Chair Randall. The this item is at the request of Fairfax County. It's the appropriation cancellation will not change the project status as an approved project in the six-year plan. To briefly go through the background, the authority adopted the six-year program in June of 2018. The authority appropriated $67 million for this project in April of 2019. All projects are strived to maintain compliance with Policy 29, which requires a project to execute a standard project agreement within 3 months of appropriation. And in order to maintain compliance with Policy 29, the county has requested, for the reasons that contained in their letter attached to the staff report, to make the appropriation cancellation. That will change the classification for the $67 million from appropriated to restricted within the Regional Revenue Fund. And with that, I'm pleased to answer your questions.
Any questions? Seeing none, I'll go to a motion, Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I move the authority cancel the FY 2020 $67 million appropriation for the Fairfax County Widening of Oxford, the Lee Highway Project, reclassifying the funds in the Regional Revenue Fund from appropriated to restricted.
Second.
Motion made and seconded by Mr. Meyer. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed unanimously by all board members present. Next, we have the CMAC and RACP recognition to the group to the CTP.
I can handle it.
So, Madam Chair, it's that time of year again where we make CMAC and RSTP recommendations to the Commonwealth Transportation Board. This year, we're looking at recommendations for fiscal year 2026 funding. Just as a reminder, a few years ago, we were required by the Commonwealth to program CMAC and RSTP funds to be consistent with the life of the six-year program instead of doing it at each fiscal year that we were currently embarking on. The authority established a deadline of Friday, December 13, 2019 as the application deadline, and we received a total of 33 CMAC RSTP applications requesting $154 million and some change. Now, I will note that we are working on funding estimate because, of course, this is out year, so we're working on the amounts we think we will have, and that is a total of $77,718,152 combined, with $23 million of that being CMAC money and $55.8 being RSTP money. And we do work with VDOT regarding these estimates. In your packet, there is the list of projects that we work with the RJAC, the Regional and Jurisdiction Agency Coordinating Committee, to develop a funding recommendation. We do include some off-the-top projects and then projects that are allocated via jurisdiction. And with your recommendation of approval tonight to send these projects forward to the Commonwealth Transportation Board, who makes the final decision.
Any questions for Ms. Becker? What would our decision by CTP be made?
June. This is usually a June decision. It's part of the... Yes.
This is out here. Mm-hmm.
No, well, yeah,
2026.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm sure I'm going to put all the recommendations.
Second.
This has been made by Mr. Snyder, seconded by Mr. McKay. Discussion on the motion. Mr. Snyder, anything?
So So, Madam Chair, the Infrastructure for Rebuilding America, which is called the INFRA Discretionary Grant Program, they did release the notice regarding applications. We did receive requests from two localities and one agency to support or provide a letter of support for their application. Prince William County requested support for the Route 15 improvements with the railroad overpass. DRPT requested a letter of support for the Long Bridge expansion project. And Fairfax County is requesting support for Richmond Highway project. I will note that all three of those projects are in your long-range transportation plan, and providing this letter of support is consistent with the code regarding MBTA actively trying to seek federal funds for projects when applicable.
Governance and Personnel Committee update. So we have the Governance and Personnel Committee right before this meeting. We had a quorum, even though Mr. McCage would like to join us. lots of things were discussed. I'm going to turn it over to Tracy. And before I turn over to Tracy, I will say in the full authority meeting what I said in the GPC meeting, which is that. Ms. Boehner has been up and down 95 more times than we count over the past couple of months. I was down there with Ms. Boehner and Ms. Blackman.
Seems like a month ago.
But I will say, I want to say that Ms. Boehner has done an amazingly good job. We went into this session with basically $1 million from I-81, maybe. We're coming out much better than we were in, and that's because Ms. Boehner knows everyone, works well, states what we're looking for, but does it with such grace, and just knows how to get around all the people. They're down there, seems to have read all the personalities, and have done a fantastic job. So if you can give an update on where we're at right now, which is
right. Thank you, Madam Chair. It is a team effort. I am down with most of your liaisons during session, and we strategize often and talk to the legislators a lot. But we are in a good position because we have two bills that are providing $30 million for the authority through new taxes. That's the Governor's Omnibus Bill, House Bill 1414, Speaker's Bill, and Senate Bill 1890, Senator Sasson's bill. We also have a bill that provides $70 million for the authority. That is Delegate Watson's bill, House Bill 729, which passed the House 55-45 and is sitting in the Senate as we speak. Her bill provides, again, the $30 million for the grantors, similar to exactly the same as the governor's two bills, but has an additional $40 million of state revenues, specifically the state recreation tax revenues raised in Northern Virginia, and those are going to stay in Northern Virginia and are being directed to the authority. So that would bring us a net $70 million should we get this bill to the governor and he funds it.
And if the I-81 bill actually saw the money that's supposed to come out of I-81?
If that ramps up to $20 million a year, then we will be at $90 million out of the 102 we lost.
With 50% of that being state funds.
Yes. So the two principles you all had of not all of it being on the backs of Northern Virginia and that there be a state component. We actually have three bills that together make that happen. And so our goal will be to get the provisions of Delegate Watts' bill inserted, either keeping moving along as a standalone bill, or inserted into the House and Senate versions of the governor's omnibus bills.
And do you really do you want to quickly discuss what we were colloquially calling protective language?
Yes. So we have talked about it. The chair talked about it when she was down, and the concern is that it was, let's focus on the money. We can try to figure out protective language. Senator Barker's concern about protective language later, and let's focus on getting the money. I think the challenges are, one, as we'll all discuss, it's hard to prevent the General Assembly from doing anything. That's who they are, the General Assembly. But we did talk about in the GPC meeting that the group of regions who have their own transportation money is growing by one this year. Central Virginia, Richmond and its surrounding suburbs, have come together, who believes it, to seek additional funding and create their own transportation authority. That bill has cleared the House. I expect that it will clear the Senate. And so we talked about actually building a coalition of those of us with our own regional money over the next year, coming up with language that we all supported, and going as a group, because you'd have Northern Virginia, Hampton Roads, Central Virginia, and I-81. That's a pretty large part of the state. And coming together and seeking that language in 2021. So don't want to give it up, but maybe take the year to build a coalition. So it's not just about Northern Virginia, and it's actually about those regions who have taken it upon themselves, I mean, to raise their own revenue and want to spend it for transportation. So, and with that, happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Can you address the other part of the administration's bill, which are the safety provisions?
Yes.
You don't have to send a WTOP on anymore to realize the deterioration of highway safety throughout the region. Virginia lags way behind in terms of highway safety measures. On the administration, I think, would pretty much put us up to where we ought to be. And those specific measures are listed on page 5. The reason why I know this is because the Senate Transportation Committee basically shredded them all, with very few exceptions. So I'm wondering, where are we right now with each of the safety measures? And I think collectively, we would be a lot of decent not allowing those to get
So those measures, as Mr. Snyder has said, have mixed responses. In the House...
Mr. Snyder said, you didn't say mixed responses.
Okay, they got some competitive shredding. So...
really unmixed.
So what has come out of the House and Senate have been the handheld and the safety bill. I'm sorry, the handheld... and allowing local governments to reduce the speed limits on certain commercial or residential areas. Those have survived both bodies. Now it gets a little complicated. The House is pretty much stuck with the list the governor started out with, and so all of those are either in standalone bills and or in the omnibus bill. The Senate did a lot of shredding. They took them all out of the omnibus bill. Their standalone bill was reduced to local government and seatbelts. There is a standalone handheld.
A standalone bill.
There is also a standalone, they also did approve, though, a standalone handheld bill. The piece that the Senate has just not liked is the open alcohol container portion of the safety.
I'm still confused by that.
You're not the only one. Virginia actually has restricted federal funding because we don't have what the feds want us to have in terms of open alcohol containers, which means that if you have a jar of a mixed punch you had at a tailgate, if you've had a bottle of wine in a restaurant, didn't finish it, and have recorked it, the feds want you to have it out of the passenger area. That is not current Virginia law, although many people think it is. Current Virginia law says you can have it in the passenger part of your car. There's a lot of pushback on that because, what was the quote, I don't want to put a partially corked bottle of wine in my trunk. So, I just say that. But we're going to get a handheld bill. We're going to get a primary seatbelt bill. We're going to get a bill that requires seat belts for all passengers in the car.
The person that doesn't want to put a partially drank bottle of wine in their car, by the time they get home, that bottle of wine is going to be completely drunk. That's the problem with that,
right,
to be honest.
So we'll get handheld. That's going to happen. The governor will get a handheld bill. There will be a safety belt as a primary offense. Open container, I think, will go away during conference because they just can't come to closure.
So right now, you can have any open container.
Driver can't have it, but other passengers can. That's actually the law.
Can be drinking their beer in the back seat.
Yeah.
Really, it's not about
the
bottle of wine. Let's be clear.
Right. Well, apparently nobody drinks beer. It's all about wine. So that's what's happened with those.
So one of the things that's important to us is the ability to lower the speed limit below 25 miles per hour, because we're getting clobbered with neighborhood, cut through and speeding and all that. So.
And that survived.
Did it? I wasn't entirely clear.
It did. Yeah. Well, they brought that bill back up, and so it is in the Senate bill that you saw get shredded,
okay.
And it's also in the House bill, the omnibus bill. So that is surviving.
Okay. Well, I just wondered, could this group either individually or collectively just get a lot of support for the administration's safety package? It seems to me a pretty good stuff. And they'll do what they're going to do, and we may win on some of them or not. But to me, it seems to me within our mission to navigate for that. But it's up to you all.
Yeah, related to that. First, thank you, Tracy. What Phyllis said is so true. You guys are great down there, the whole team. I will tell you, I had a long, when I mean long, a couple hours conversation on Saturday with Delegate Watts, who was still working on this bill. So this shows you how fast things happen. She was still writing elements of it on Saturday. And huge, huge improvement. And so related to Mr. Snyder's question, I was going to suggest we obviously support passage of HB 729 because it brings a lot more revenue and it addresses some of the state funding piece that we talked about at one of our previous meetings. And I guess the question is, her bill doesn't have a lot of the elements that Mr. Snyder is talking about. So the concern I have, if we support the administration's bill and support Delegate Watts' bill, how do we differentiate between the two? Because one doesn't contain all of those elements and one does. So maybe you can help us understand,
sure,
at least in your conversations, how these things might come together.
Well, the goal right now, talking to Delegate Watts just yesterday, is she talked about putting her element of her bill, and at this point, it's really the recordation tax portion,
mm-hmm,
inserting that into the two governor bills. The House now has the SAS law Senate bill before them. So that can happen, and also she'd like our assistance in convincing the Senate to add her provisions to,
mm-hmm,
the House bill that's crossed over. So that would take care of the funding piece. There's also a school of thought that keeping her bill as a standalone alive as long as possible as a backup.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have both moving at the same time. They don't conflict. They actually complement each other. So there's that strategy. In terms of what Mr. Snyder talked about, we could talk about the five safety elements just alone, because again,
mm-hmm,
it's complicated because in some parts of the General Assembly, they're standalone bills, and in some parts of the General Assembly, they're part of the governor's bills. And so rather than name 10 bills,
right,
just talk about the specific initiatives that are being discussed. And again, it's handheld, primary seatbelt, open container, local government.
Mm-hmm.
What am I missing?
Speed limit for cameras.
Speed limit for local government, yeah. I'm missing something. But that.
Yeah.
And just talk about them and just say, we don't care what bill they're in, just, you know, they need to be supported and move forward because it's important. And
I think that's a good compromise,
exactly,
because of these things moving together. And I feel really strongly that we need to be supporting Delegate Watts' bill. And I will tell you that, it goes to Senate Finance,
yeah,
if I'm not right, which on that, from Northern Virginia, Senator Howell, Sasslaw, Barker, Peterson, Marsden, and Evan.
Six of the 16.
Yes. So we at least need to, we should be individually making contact with those senators to make sure that, you know, they can drive this thing forward, or else, you know, in committees is where these things go sideways. And so we really need to communicate our support, in my opinion, for Delegate Watts' bill, the safety elements, and we need to do that soon, certainly before Senate Finance. And I think we should be reaching out to these individual senators. And I know you're doing that already. I'm saying, when I'm saying we, I mean us as elected officials should be doing that too.
It would really be helpful. They need to hear from you. And we, there's a third option that we could be getting on Sunday. Senate Finance will reveal its budget amendments Sunday afternoon.
Right.
Senator Barker is still working on something, and we will, while we may not hear details of when the committee votes on Sunday, I think he's waiting for the committee to approve their amendments. We will have details on Monday, just because we're all, the collective we, and by that I mean your liaisons and me, are basically camping in his office and saying we need the details and we need them now. What that does to how we feel about this, we don't know, but the bar is at 70 at this point. That's the number. You either match it or do better.
Right. And where it comes from.
I was going to say,
and where it comes from.
Where it comes from,
no,
it's really important. I mean, that's the driver for me on a lot of issues. When I talked to George, he was going to try to seek to match hers. I don't know if his is going to exceed that or not. And that is the tricky part. I mean, as we're sitting here today and these things are moving,
right,
and they're,
yeah. I mean, I do expect there to be a state element in what we get from Senator Barker, but I just don't know if it's the same level as the 40. Just don't know that yet. So that would have to be part of our again, going back, it's got to have state skin in the game. Just 70.
Where does that liquidation tax go right now?
So right now, so it's a swap that starts with the administration's omnibus bill. The omnibus bill speaks to current debt service that is being paid for by state recreation taxes, Route 58, Northern Virginia Transportation District, that's been coming out of the general fund through the state recreation taxes. The governor and his bill proposes that with the new revenue coming in through the gas tax and some other things, that they would take over that debt service and no longer ask for it from the general fund, and it would come from the transportation side of the ledger now. And so that essentially frees up that money to be spent on other things. We're just saying one of those other things is going to be the money that we raise coming back to Northern Virginia to MBTA.
Thank you.
Sure.
So I'm a little confused as to what Mark is doing. So, I mean, is this normal operating procedure for him?
Me?
Yes, he's had a very heavy. He's had a very heavy session, and it is not unusual if you're using the budget as a vehicle to do something that you you just don't know until you know. To be perfectly honest about it, I think he's been testing a lot of different ideas with his colleagues, to be perfectly honest about it.
Yeah.
George wants to get buy-in. He doesn't want to have a fist fight about this. So there's some negotiating going on with other members of Senate Finance and probably some members not on Senate Finance. There's a lot of things to trade off, and I think he's been through the session lining up people to get what they might need to make this easier happen.
So for purposes of the people that will be interacting in Richmond, what I'm hearing is we like the contents of the Watts bill, right? And then we like the five safety measures. Do we need a formal action, or is that sufficient? Is there any discussion?
I mean, I've got my marching orders.
So
I can draft a letter.
Objection, we would have without objection, two things. Mr. McCain said is correct. People could reach out to their individual legislators. But there also be a letter drafted from NPTA that I can sign on for behalf of the authority, Mr. Parrish and I, or that all the authority members can sign on too. Either way, it's fine with me. It may be easier for Mr. Parrish, like, sometimes it's hard to get everybody to sign on. So a letter that Mr. Parrish like to sign on to would be fine.
Okay.
Well, let me just be clear. So are we going to
Are we going to endorse the concepts in this piece of legislation, or are we going to go so far as to say that this is the bill that we want to pass? I think there's a nuance there that gets tricky, given that we have other people trying to solve the same problem.
We don't have any senators trying to solve the problem. We have House members.
No, we have a senator.
I mean, especially
considering he's on Senate Finance, right? So I think there's a nuance there. So
I think
it's fine. I'm with you. I think of the bills that I'm aware of at the moment, this is the best bill, right? There could be a secret bill that I like even more, but I
would advise we wait to hear from George in case we need to say that something that he's offering we also like, and put that into, here are the three things we like, plus the five.
Wait until after Sunday to write.
I think it's fine to endorse the concept in a piece of legislation. And we can say, like, we are watching this process very carefully. We like the idea of what's exactly in this bill. And you know, make it clear that we want to see as high as possible of the state contribution. You know, we take the trade off of you know how this money is redispersed is a good one, you know. But the bar is not closed. We don't have to choose who we're leaving with. Yeah. So.
We have an idea
where we're going, but let's wait till the bar is closed.
So a concept.
Yeah.
But even as you if you don't write the letter until Monday, you may have even more to work with because you're going to be talking about that.
Because the bars closed earlier in Fairfax, in the city of Alexandria, I will just point out one technical thing, because you know I've had a lot of conversations with George about this too. We're all frustrated we haven't seen it yet. I don't know when that's going to hit, and I don't know how that will, you know, how that will time with some of the narrow window we have to weigh in. And so I would suggest that if by that time we don't know what Senator Barker has, that we could write a letter of support for this bill, notwithstanding a budget amendment that fully, you know, at least fully makes NDTA whole as a part of the direction. Because if it ends up that we miss our chance to weigh in on this bill, and then we find out George's is worse, that's going to be a problem. Vivian is coordinating this with the administration. So the reason I asked Tracy the question earlier, I don't know if George is or not, but I know
Vivian is,
and I know that the administration is okay with the elements of what she has said here. At least that's what she has told me. So I just don't want us to miss that narrow window of opportunity. And there's a way to write it that says, you know, notwithstanding a budget amendment that fully provides the support that we need. And her bill was written almost directly in response to our comment about the state. Mm-hmm. And so that's why
I totally agree with that. Does that answer your question, Mr. Wilson?
Yeah.
You guys good?
Yes.
Anybody else have any questions for Bear? All right, so then we're going to go into the Finance Committee report.
Chairman, I'm going to make this very quick. First of all, Finance Committee is meeting, getting good work done. There's been a lot of conversation about Mr. Stavros and Mr. Longy about various investment tools and subscription services that we have at our disposal that the authority approved. We're talking about the schedule for the committee meetings, budget guidance, policy 29 verbal discussions, and investment portfolio report, etc. All in your report. And our next meeting is next week, 1 p.m. on Thursday.
So, Mom, do you have anything you want to add, sir?
Nothing to add to the reports. We've got to dig into questions.
Does anyone have any questions about any of the reports? All right, see you now.
Just one item, Madam Chair. I do want to note the 5th annual ITS roundtable takes place on Wednesday, March 11th. From 8 a.m. through noon. We did send an email to authority members who would like to attend to let us know, and we will register you for free. We did get some responses. For those of you who have not contacted us, please let us know. And we have had authority members participate and attend in the past, so it really is one of the highlights as we talk about transportation technology. So please let us know. And for those of you who have pre-registered, thank you.
Wonderful. For my comments, I don't have many. We won't have this meeting, but the next meeting we will have a closed session to clean up some things and the personnel documents that have been laid out there for a month and have not been cleaned out. I would ask authority members, if you can, to actually identify an alternate to the authority and try to give that name to Monica and pass, you know, whoever the alternate is kind of, we're not sure. So if you can identify who your alternate is, just make that you. But if you can identify who your alternate is and give your name to Monica, I'd appreciate that. I have nothing else, so it's good. We are adjourned.